Hello, heroes. Welcome to Modifier. I'm your host, Megan Dornbrock. This week, we're digging into a good old-fashioned homebrew with my friend Chris. He was kind enough to talk to me about his long-running conversion project of bringing the Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 Beguiler class over into Pathfinder. We talk about his approach to tackling a project like this and how he's been able to fine-tune it over the years without a regular test group of his own. Technical note, we did have a few audio issues with this one that should be mostly fixed, but I apologize for anything that came out a bit less coherent than you've come to expect. Next time I'll be sure to triple-check my summoning circle before a recording. Let's get to the show. I'm joined today by my friend Chris, who is working on a homebrew project, which is something we haven't talked about a lot yet on the show, and I'm super excited to dig into that. But first, Chris, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit, what you do?
Hi, everybody. I'm Chris. I am, in real life, I am a laser scientist. I'm a PhD student right now studying for my PhD. And in my spare time, I'm, as Megan said, I'm working on a homebrew of the Beguiler class, bringing it from 3.5 edition into Pathfinder.
Awesome. So you work in Pathfinder, or you're working in converting to Pathfinder, which is also another thing we haven't talked about a ton on the show. A lot of our conversions and modified projects are powered by the Apocalypse World games. So we're all going to have to think back, I think, a little bit to Pathfinder and Dungeons & Dragons if we haven't played it recently. Can you talk a little bit about what a Beguiler is in Dungeons & Dragons for those of us that haven't played that class or just aren't familiar with it?
Certainly. So a Beguiler is essentially a mix of a spellcaster and a rogue. And one of the really unique things that the Beguiler has is that if it's able to catch an opponent unaware, it actually makes their spells much harder to resist. So on the spellcaster side, they're very strongly focused in terms of illusion and enchantment magic. So they are essentially focused on tricking their opponents in as many ways as they can.
Nice. So Beguilers, when do they first show up in D&D? I know when I was doing some digging, I know they're at least in 3.5.
Yeah, I think they were introduced in 3.5 in the Player's Handbook too.
Okay, yeah. So taking from 3.5 and moving to Pathfinder is, you know, they're not dissimilar systems.
Correct.
What's the draw of Pathfinder in particular to you?
Okay, well, the thing about Pathfinder that really grabbed me, I actually started out playing 3.5 myself. And as I was looking through options that were compatible with 3.5, I came across Pathfinder. And the thing that really grabbed me was that in 3.5, there seemed like there was a prescribed role for every class, every race. So if you wanted to be a gnome that wasn't magical, you wanted to be a gnome fighter, you were at a disadvantage because there were parts of your race kit that were wasted because you weren't going to be casting illusion spells. And in Pathfinder, they've introduced for races, they have alternate racial traits. Mm-hmm. Which allows you to switch out part of your racial abilities. So if you wanted to play that fighting gnome, you could get rid of the spell-like abilities and get more martially inclined abilities for that. And likewise with classes, there are archetypes. So if you don't want to play, you know, exactly this kind of fighter, if you don't want to be a sword and board fighter, you can pick up an archetype that is more associated with say archery.
Okay. So while they are similar systems, there is a lot more, enough differences that you can't just lift Beguiler from 3.5 and say, oh, it's for Pathfinder now. Which I think I read a little bit of your comments as you shared this online, that you looked into some other Beguilers that folks had made for Pathfinder and they weren't quite what you were looking for. Can you talk a little bit about what you found and why they weren't quite what you wanted?
Sure. So oftentimes when you talk about conversion from 3.5 to Pathfinder, because they're such similar systems, a lot of people simply suggest you just increase the hit dice to match the base attack bonus. That was one of the changes that Pathfinder made, is that they increased everyone's hit dice and tied it specifically so the half base attack bonus get a D8 or D6, the three quarters mm-hmm. base attack get a D8, and the full base attack gets a D10. And that was really unsatisfying, because one of the changes that the people at Paizo who make Pathfinder made when they introduced their core line is that they introduced new aspects to every class. They were very interested in making sure that there were no dead levels. So a lot of classes in 3.5 were very front loaded. Like a cleric or a wizard basically gets all their class features right up top. And then for the rest of the game, you're just getting new spells every other level or so. And that's a little boring when you're leveling up. And in Pathfinder, they introduce basically everyone gets more goodies. Everyone's getting school abilities. They're getting spell-like abilities. They're getting bonus feats. So you're never really leveling up and not getting anything. And the Beguiler, if you convert it straight, is full of dead levels. And that's not very interesting to play. Now, other people approach the task and they would bring the Beguiler in and they'd say, okay, what do we want to give them that's new? And they just reached into Pathfinder and rogues get these abilities called rogue talents. And they just said, okay, so Beguilers get rogue talents whenever they don't get a new level of spells. And that's pretty boring too, because it's not really that unique. So that was one of my goals in bringing this conversion out, was to give them actually a unique set of abilities.
Okay. So is that kind of where you start? Like, how do you start doing a conversion like this?
Okay, so in the beginning, the very first version of this, I looked at the Beguiler and I said, okay, what can we do to give this a little bit of customizability, to make it so that the player, as they're leveling up, gets to make a few choices about what kind of character their Beguiler is going to be that's different. It's not just going to be one flat set of abilities. They make choices. And in doing this, I came up with the idea of the Beguiler's Guild. So the Beguiler's Guild, in the fiction of my conversion, is this worldwide organization that nobody knows about. It makes it very easy to slot into any existing world. And inside this guild, there are orders. There were, in the beginning, four orders and two groups that were called apostates that were running counter to the will of the guild itself. So I had to start to flesh that out. And I really based a lot of what I gave the Beguiler on what Pathfinder did with the sorcerers. In Pathfinder, sorcerers have bloodlines, and because of their, based on your bloodline, you get powers at certain levels and you get bonus spells as you're leveling up. Mm-hmm. So my orders end up being following that very closely. In fact, some of the early orders were pretty, most of the abilities were picked and chosen from those sorcerer bloodlines, just because I wasn't quite sure. I wasn't super confident in my balance ability, so I figured might as well work straight from the source material. That's probably pretty balanced, right?
Probably.
And the answer is not so much, unfortunately. So when I first put this conversion together, and I put it up on Reddit, and I got a bunch of comments back. There was a lot of interest. A lot of people liked the Beguiler from 3.5. And there wasn't really anything like it in Pathfinder yet. Mm-hmm. So there have been a few people who have tried to bring the Beguiler into Pathfinder. And I got a lot of good comments, and I sort of workshopped it. And eventually it turned into 36 pages of conversion full of new feats, new spells. I think we're up to 6 orders now, and equipment and all sorts of new goodies.
Yes, I was looking through it. So the Beguiler's Guild that you have, the closest thing, like, it's based on the Sorcerer's Bloodline, but there's nothing else quite like that in D&D, right?
No, there's not anything like that. And in fact, when I started, the guild was a lot more prescriptive. Okay. And while I was developing the the conversion, I had a lot of comments come back to me. They didn't like the guild aspect because I was writing, you know, I was including my fiction of the guild, and that limits the ability to insert that into your own universe or into the Pathfinder setting. And so at one point I took a step back and I scaled back a lot of the lore that I had included with the guild. Mm-hmm. And I just tried to make it as generic as possible, that beguilers are trained by some sort of guild. And as the conversion progressed, it actually even less and less of the guild sort of followed through into the actual crunch of the conversion. And now it's pretty much mostly fluff. And I'm actually in the process of writing up a variant rule set for the beguiler that gives you options for if you want to play a beguiler that doesn't have a guild. It's just, say, he or she is just a character who developed this magic on their own.
Okay. So that's what you had mentioned before about having the apostates. This is what what they've turned into?
Correct. Yeah, essentially the apostasies were meant to be like forbidden schools of magic. Particularly one was necromancy based and one was based on manipulating sleep and dreams. And neat. That idea that I was enforcing that these would be schools that weren't universally approved or that were universally disapproved of by the guild made it a little bit hard for say someone who wanted to have a little bit of necromancy on their beguiler to use that. And so I actually folded the apostasies into the order framework so that one of the orders is slightly necromancy. They're primarily paralyzation debuffers and coup de grace attacks. So that was a fusion of one of the first orders and one of the first apostasies.
Cool. What got you working on this particular conversion? Is this a class that you particularly like and found missing, or?
This was I've never played a beguiler as a player character. But as a DM, in one of my campaigns, I had a beguiler character that was sort of a central NPC. Mm-hmm. And I really, really liked the idea of this class. And what actually happened is when I was in the process of moving my mindset from 3.5 to Pathfinder, I was trying to set up a game. Mm-hmm. And my wife saw me looking through my old notes from my old campaign. And she said, "Oh, what's that?" And I said, "Oh, that's a beguiler." And I explained how it worked, and she was very interested, and she wanted to play a beguiler in Pathfinder, and there was no way to do that at the time. So I went through and did the conversion, and that campaign never actually happened. But the conversion itself kind of picked up on Reddit and then on the Paizo message boards themselves, and kind of snowballed from there.
How long ago did you start working on this?
I started working on it 2.5 years ago. It was January 2014.
And sharing it online, like starting to share something like this on Reddit. What is that process like? What kind of experience did you have sharing this? And what would you tell other people who are nervous about sharing some of their conversions and homebrews on Reddit?
So sharing homebrew is a bit of a harrowing experience. Homebrew itself kind of got a bad rap after 3.5. There was a lot of really bad homebrew out there, and good homebrew seems to be sort of very far between. It's very difficult to find what people would call good homebrew. So when you post the thread with homebrew on Reddit or anywhere else, really, Giants in the Playground or on Paizo, you kind of start off at a disadvantage. People go in and say, "Oh, this is homebrew. It's not going to be any good." And then you have to deal with the fact that everything that you do in homebrew is going to be game-breakingly imbalanced to some people and completely worthless to other people. So one of the big things that I learned in this project was to learn to pick your battles. The Beguiler is a class that a lot of people have very strong feelings about. One of the really unique things about the Beguiler is that it's an intelligence-based spontaneous caster. There are not very many of those. And in Pathfinder, the tendency is that pretty much all spontaneous casters are based on their charisma. That's their spell casting stat. And so throughout this process, even now, 2.5 years later, someone will come across this and say, it's a spontaneous caster. Why isn't it charisma based? And I have to sort of say, you know, this is a very key feature that I feel it's a very key feature from 3.5 that it was an intelligence based spontaneous caster. And it's important to me. I am not going to budge on this. There are other aspects. For instance, the Beguiler was kind of weird because it was a lot of its powers only really work inside melee range. And because of that, Wizards of the Coast gave it a bigger hit die than usual for their full casters. It still had the half base attack bonus, but it had a D6 hit die. So when I made the conversion, I left it at a half base attack bonus, but I gave it a D8 hit die, which is what the Pathfinder equivalent would be. A lot of people had problems with that. And finally, you know, someone said to me, looking at what you've done with this Beguiler, it's forced into melee. It's got a lot of abilities that are kind of a little bit more combat oriented than a wizard or a sorcerer might have. I think it would be fair to give it the 3/4 base attack bonus. And finally, I relented and bumped them up to a 3/4 base attack bonus. So it's a game of picking your battles, learning which hills you want to die on and which hills you can afford to give up.
Is there any kind of trick? I guess, how do you balance their reactions with your gut instinct?
Well, I do get a lot of, even still, I still get a lot of theory craft kind of response that, like, this has too much. But I am really fortunate that I had a group of complete strangers that just showed up in my thread on the Paizo boards who playtested the heck out of this conversion. And they told me where I was having problems, where things were a bit too powerful, things were a bit too weak. And so I was really lucky to have a group of people who were actually willing to put in time. They have been in my thread two and a half years now. Every time I make a change, they will sort of have a little side project, a little side game with their groups and come back with feedback for me. So the biggest advice I can give about maintaining, about dealing with balance issues is to listen to what people have to say, but listen especially to people who have hands-on experience with the product.
That's awesome. I know that was one of the things I wanted to ask too, with you not being able to get your game going with it, with the Beguiler. Having those folks, you know, having somebody out there who's actually playtesting it is awesome that they were willing to do that. Is that something that they just liked the product enough that they wanted to try it out?
Yes, definitely. They, a lot of people come through my thread and they just say, they just want to stop in to say thank you. They've been looking for something like this for a long time. A lot of them have seen the other conversions. That's getting less and less now because I didn't expect it to get this big, but apparently now anytime you Google Beguiler and Pathfinder, you find three of my threads right up top. Even if you just Google Beguiler, I'm on the second page, which was really exciting for me.
Yeah.
So this project kind of took off unexpectedly. Having people who are willing to play test is incredibly useful. I've seen a lot of other homebrew projects where people all say, you know, we'll play test this, and then they never get any feedback back. So it was very lucky that I was able to get a good group of people who are willing to not only play test but also tell me when I'm wrong. They will flat out tell me when I come up with an idea that's just way too much. It's beyond the pale, or it's completely useless. They are not afraid to tell me that, and I am very thankful for those people because it keeps me free. When you're giving someone comments, if you're pulling punches, you're really hurting them as much as you're hurting yourself. Getting honest feedback is crucial to the process. I've come up with plenty of ideas that got thrown out whole cloth simply because they really weren't feasible. And playtesting is what got us there.
That's wonderful. I know homebrew gets the side eye a lot as, you know, not real game design, but you've been at this particular conversion for 2.5-ish years. And, you know, it takes that long and it takes that feedback and it takes playtesting and it is real game design.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful that there is that community out there for conversions and for homebrews. The folks that are playtesting for you, are they mostly on the Paizo forums or is that a Reddit group?
It's mostly on the Paizo forums. I do have a number of people on Reddit who regularly get username notifications because, you know, someone will ask a question like, you know, what's the best way to do this? And they'll jump up and they say, Chris made this beguiler, play it, it's great. And that really means a lot. It's really kind of touching when that happens. And there are people who are willing to go to bat for me to the point where I often don't get involved in discussions of my beguiler when they come up on Reddit or anywhere else.
Aw. This conversion, of course, it's just a PDF that you've got up right now. And it is a beautiful PDF, by the way, which I do want to talk about that. But we have one of the older episodes of the show is we talk about the legality of this stuff. And this conversion isn't something that you're selling, but it is dealing with, you know, converting D&D classes that are... The Beguiler is not a class that's in the SRD, even the 3.5 SRD. I took a look, I checked, and I am genuinely not sure how Paizo handles that sort of thing either. But is that something that you know much about that you can talk about? Is that something that Paizo like fosters, or do they just kind of quietly ignore you guys on the forums?
The Beguiler conversion is definitely a gray area, as you said. The Player's Handbook 2 is not covered under the OGL, so it's legally all product identity of Wizards of the Coast. And of course, I'm breaking the rules even more because I stole some art from Player's Handbook 2. It seems that Paizo has a board specifically for conversions, and a lot of that seems to be geared towards 3.5 conversions. Mm-hmm. So it seems like, for the most part, they're turning a blind eye a little bit to the shadier side of converting things that are out of OGL. And I haven't yet been served with a cease and desist from Wizards, so I don't know if that would ever happen. Mm-hmm. But as long as they aren't serving me with papers, I am happy to keep working on this project.
Awesome. Like we mentioned before, there's no profit being made. This is just people having fun in their own homes, playing Beguilers. Mm-hmm. So yeah, speaking of how pretty this PDF is, I'm curious, how did you do that?
Okay, so the formatting is another thing that I get questions about a lot. It is all done painstakingly, involving a lot of black magic in Word. It's all manual formatting.
Oh my god.
Every time I say that, somebody who does layout design professionally, like, dies a little on the inside.
Yeah, it hurts.
I am not a professional by any means, but I am really good at making things that look really authentic. And Paizo has made it easier because they include include all of their logos for their product lines. That's all OGL stuff. You can download print quality versions of those logos for free, if you want to, from the Paizo website. So I did have to do a little bit of probably not the most legal stuff in stealing backgrounds from Paizo products and learning which fonts they're using. But yes, I've done as best I can to emulate the style of an actual Paizo product. And in fact, I even open up the PDFs and get screen captures and use a color picker to figure out exactly what color they use for their fonts.
Nice.
So, I mean, that's when I do something, I like to do it nicely.
That's dedication. That's what that is. And we will give no one your address so they can't find you.
Exactly. And I think the professional look of it, I think has definitely helped in terms of spreading it, and making and has been sort of probably an integral part of the popularity because it looks like an authentic product. I've come across a few places where people have said, I found this official Paizo Beguiler. Which book does it come from? But I was doing this even when I was just doing like when I made homebrew classes for my home games with just some friends, I would It was fun to me to try and make it look like I had taken a scan of some pages from Complete Arcane for this new class that I had made.
Yeah, it gives it some gravitas. I like it.
Yeah. Thank you.
What has been the hardest part of this conversion, do you think?
The hardest part of the conversion is really getting something that satisfies a lot of people. Like we've talked about, there's always going to be the person who says, this is way too many things for the Beguiler. There's always going to be the people who say, you know, like, this isn't anywhere near as powerful as a full-blown wizard. And unfortunately, that's the point. That's what I'm working with. One of the things that I've been really trying to keep at the core of the Beguiler conversion is the fact that, yes, this is a ninth level caster, but because of the limitations on spell selection, it has been it's nowhere near as powerful or game-breaking as a wizard or a sorcerer is.
Mm-hmm.
And so sort of fighting to keep my vision central in the conversion while everyone is trying to pull the Beguiler to what they want has been a somewhat difficult process.
Yeah. Well, tell them they can make their own conversions then.
I have. Actually, during last year, Paizo came out with a class called The Mesmerist, which some people have said is their take on the Beguiler. And when that came out, I had a lot of comments about, you know, like, is the Beguiler conversion really needed anymore? Couldn't we make the Beguiler into a Mesmerist archetype? And one of the things that I said to people who asked me that is if you want to play the Mesmerist, that's fine. I am not going to force anyone to play my Beguiler. Everyone is free to play whatever they want, but I'm going to keep working on the Beguiler for people who want to play Beguilers.
Awesome. What do you think? Do you think the Mesmerist is, as I haven't read anything about the Mesmerist now, I wasn't aware of it. Are they similar, do you think?
There's a similar theme. They are, again, very enchantment and illusion oriented. It was actually part of Paizo's new occult classes. So they're psychic casters instead of being, say, arcane casters. Mm. There are notes of the Beguiler in the Mesmerist, but I think it misses some of the point myself because it's a sixth level spellcaster, so they don't get high level spells like the Beguiler did in 3.5. And like the Beguiler does in my conversion. They don't have a lot of really roguelike abilities. It's mostly like they get a bunch of skills per level, but other than that, they're not trap finders. They're not, you know, they don't have any other abilities that really enhance the rogue side of the rogue spellcaster hybrid.
Gotcha. Okay. So there are definitely advantages to playing one versus the other, or they do meet different needs.
Definitely, yeah.
And that actually reminded me, one of the things I wanted to ask about the Beguiler and the spells that they can do is you mentioned that the Beguiler is focused in terms of the spells that they can use. Anything that would typically allow you to take spells from another spellbook, the Beguiler doesn't do that sort of thing. So because they are so focused, like I took a look at the spell list and to me it looks huge. looks like there's a lot of possibilities here, but what sort of spells and things are outside of the Beguiler's purview, for example?
Okay, so just first to touch on one of the unique things about the Beguiler in 3.5 is it was part of a series of classes that Wizards came out with where they had a unique ability. They actually knew all of the spells on their spell list. Mm. And when I first did the conversion, that was the way that I was managing the spell list. However, as the conversion went on, it got harder and harder to say, you know, like the Beguiler is supposed to be the epitome of an illusionist and an enchanter. Mm-hmm. And then it was hard to reconcile that with the fact that they can't get this specific spell because it was published after the conversion started. And that was a problem, I think, in 3.5 as well, is that the Beguiler spell list was set in Player's Handbook 2, and any other thematic spells that came out after that, mm-hmm. were just completely left off that list. I kind of struggled with that for a while. The spell list got big. People complained about how big the spell list was and that the Beguiler knew all of their spells. So I ended up actually giving them a number of spells known per level, which is a big departure from the 3.5 Beguiler. That was, as I said, that was one of the battles that I eventually relented on. Mm-hmm. And so they don't have the same progression as a sorcerer. They actually get about roughly five or six more spells per level known. And that's to make up for the fact that they don't have the breadth of the Beguiler's, spell list, or let's say of the wizard spell list. So Beguiler's spell list, as I said, it's very focused on illusion and enchantment. They miss out on a lot of the utility spells that are there for survivability. They don't get flight. They don't get teleportation magic is typically out of their hands. Teleportation was actually a really big thing because when people were playtesting, they said, you know, teleportation, even short range teleportation, can make mm-hmm. certain skill checks trivial, like climbing a cliff or mm-hmm. crossing a chasm. And that was something that I wanted the Beguiler to be really good at those skill checks. They have a lot of skills per level. They're an int-based caster, so they should have a lot of skills in their quiver. And then the fact that spells could completely remove that was problematic, so I actually ended up pulling out almost all of the teleportation magic included on their spell list. And they also don't get a lot of the more game-breaking spells, so they're not privy to things like wish. They can't conjure in any sort of creature to do their will like a wizard can.
Gotcha.
And that's a large part of what makes the wizard and the sorcerer such a balanced challenge in Pathfinder, is that the wizard and the sorcerer have access to this huge catalog of spells and can often conjure a creature that's going to be better than the fighter at fighting. They can, you know, they can cast wish to solve any numbers of problems. The Beguiler doesn't have access to that. What they have access to is illusion and enchantment. So they are putting up illusions to fool people. They are enchanting people to get them to do what the Beguiler wants. One of the other things that they don't get a lot of is damage-dealing spells. They don't get any spells that deal direct damage to anyone. They have one or two non-lethal damage spells, but that's about it. So they're not blasters, and they're not what's typically known as a god wizard. They are very strongly focused on illusion and enchantment, and that's part of what makes the Beguiler more balanced as a ninth level caster. A lot of people see a ninth level caster and they say, well, that can't possibly be balanced. That's going to be, they separate the balance of classes up into tiers, and they say it's got to be either tier one or tier two, but it's actually closer to a tier three class because of the fact that it's only able to do a very narrow window it only has a very narrow window of spells that it lets it manipulate humanoids, but a lot of creatures in the later games are actually immune to a lot of the mind affecting abilities and spells of a Beguiler.
So Beguilers know what they're about.
Yes.
I can respect that. Awesome. So now that you've been working on this for a while, what's been your favorite part, or what are you most proud of?
That really changes from week to week. Every time I come up with something new, it becomes my favorite thing. My wife's actually asked me, you know, like, why don't I'm always making characters, even though I don't really have a game going right now. I'm always making characters. My wife asked me, why don't I ever create a Beguiler character? And I said, well, I can't really create a Beguiler because then I'd have a favorite order. and I try to avoid that, but it really, I would say my favorite thing is almost always like the most recent thing, because I'll see something cool and be inspired to do something that the Beguiler can do that's similar. So it kind of changes from day to day.
Yeah, that was a mean question. Sorry.
Yeah. Which of my children is my favorite?
Mm-hmm. Well, then, do you have anything any advice that you'd give to people who are looking to do some conversions from D&D to Pathfinder?
So there are guides out there. Actually, Paizo released a guide for converting from 3.5, but it's really hard to turn a process like this where you're taking a living thing like a role playing game class, as funny as that is to say, and to brew it down into it like a series of numbers and rules. So the advice that I give to people is to really look through the class and figure out where you think the heart and the soul of the class is and build outward from there. So for me, the Beguiler really, the focus for me was keeping this focus spell list with really powerful spell casting, and that unique balance to me was really central to the class. I've constantly throughout the years when I was working on this, people have been telling me, you know, bring it down to a 6th level class. And I don't want to do that because to me, the heart and the soul of the Beguiler is that they are expert magicians at a very, very small section of magic.
Cool. Are you working on any other?
I'm actually still working on the Beguiler.
Yeah.
It's been, as I said, two and a half years. And a couple months ago, one of my playtesters came back to me and they said, you know, you've changed this order and this order and this order and come up with this order. But this one order, the Arcane Hand, which is the sort of default caster order for Beguilers, really hasn't been updated in a good 2 years. And so I've actually been currently working on and thinking about how best to update them. I've got some ideas just loosely penned out, but I don't have anything. One of the things about converting is that these games, especially games that are based on 3.5, like Pathfinder is, there's a ton of game jargon. As much fluff as there is throughout this entire genre, the only thing that really matters is the crunch. And that's hidden in this really sometimes very obtuse language of abilities and statuses. And even the first party like Paizo sometimes has problems with this. Sometimes there's a specific ability that the sniper archetype for the Slayer has that specifically references that you can't use it when somebody's aware of you, but awareness isn't a status that's defined in the rules. So that's completely left out there in the hands of Dungeon Master or Game Master Fiat. How they interpret that. Paizo themselves, as they move along, they release frequently asked questions where they can kind of touch on these issues. But for those of us who are outside of the first party, we have to really focus on getting the jargon right, trying to be as specific as possible. That's one thing that I'm really proud of, actually, with this conversion, is that a lot of people will come to my thread and they'll say, I've been playing with this for a year, and we have not had a situation where the dungeon master and the player disagree on how an ability works.
Oh, wow.
That is a big thing to me. Cause I mean, even in first party products, there's constantly those situations of, well, how does this interact with that? And so I'm very proud. And part of that comes from the fact that I've tried to keep the Beguiler as encapsulated as possible. So, a lot of the abilities specifically call out that they only work with Beguiler spells. In Pathfinder, there is a very common thing to do. If you're making a blaster, a caster, a lot of people will take one level of a sorcerer for a very specific bloodline ability that increases all damage of one element type. And then they'll take the rest of their levels in a wizard. It's called an admixture wizard, which has the ability to change all element types to that one type that they have an advantage for. And because the wording on that ability was so strange, they just mentioned spells. A lot of people were interpreting it saying that that one sorcerer ability works for even the wizard spells. And in fact, Paizo's come out and said, you know what? This is how it works. That sorcerer ability works on every other class that you have. So I've tried my best to avoid that. That was actually one of the early comments I got from Reddit was I had an ability that only required a touch attack. It didn't have a save on it. And they said, that is the perfect one level dip for a fighter or another martial character, because with one level, they get that paralyzing ability and then they can just coup de grace all day. And so that sort of stuck with me in my class design. So I have a lot of the abilities for the Beguiler. They might come online at first level, but they don't become what I wanted them to be until seventh or ninth level.
That's really cool.
Thank you.
It's been a while since we've played Pathfinder, but the number of games that we play and have those kind of discrepancies, you know, it's almost unheard of to experience a game where we don't have to consult someone else, you know, about how does this work exactly. So to be able to pull that off is not a small feat.
I think as an engineer, I have a bit of an advantage because a lot of these games are written by people who are very creative, but they aren't necessarily versed in writing in jargon and technical jargon. Whereas my engineering background, I have a little bit of a better grasp on sort of the obtuse world of technical writing.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I feel like we've had a couple of different types of engineers on talking about their projects. There's something about that mindset that's cool, that it gets drawn to these games just as much as like the creative people. I really like that.
Well, I mean, there's always, of course, that culture of nerdiness amongst engineers. But I mean, it's also there amongst creative types. There's artists love to play, writers love to play. So it's such a wide swath of society. But I think maybe engineers might be more interested in modifying.
Yeah.
Even with a system like Pathfinder, where people are constantly saying, you know, like, have we reached 3.5 rules bloat levels where there's just too many classes and we need to start all over again? There's still always, every day, there's someone on the subreddit, on the Pathfinder subreddit, that's saying, how could I make One Punch Man? Or how could I make The Witcher? Or they're always looking for something. And that's something that I've used as inspiration. The Baleful Shadow order, actually, it was originally a very different order. And then X-Men Days of Future Past came out. And everywhere you went, people were saying, how do I make blank? How do I make blank? And I, of course, was also very interested in that. And that's actually how the Stygian Step ability, where they can move as if they were shadows and sidestep attacks of opportunities, actually came from that directly as inspiration.
Oh, cool.
As the years have gone by, the conversion has become more and more unique. It started off very, very rigidly based along the bloodlines of the sorcerer. And as I've updated order after order, as I've introduced new orders, they've sort of evolved. And oftentimes they evolve directly from something that I just saw that was really cool, or something that was mentioned, like I'll see someone was talking about, you know, this kind of demon, and I'll look at the creature entry and I'll say, that ability would be really good for the Wandering Heart. And that was actually a recent change that I made, the Wandering Heart Beguiler able to dominate people and not give them an extra save when you ask them to do something against their will. And that came directly from a creature from the bestiary. And of course, I also have, besides the main conversion document, I also have a document that I call the Beguilers of the Inner Sea.
Yeah.
That actually came up because I had someone came into the thread and they said, you know, my dungeon master doesn't really know how to fit the Beguiler's Guild into Galerion, which is the Paizo official Paizo setting. So what I did is I gave them sort of a quick number of suggestions, you know, like these big cities, they probably have beguilers guilds in them. And then I started thinking about like, what would the different beguiler guilds in these different countries? Because Galerion is a kitchen sink fantasy setting. They have something for everybody. There's always a country. There's a country with barbarians and a crashed spaceship. So you've got techno barbarians. There's forever revolutionary France. Mm-hmm. There's sort of any kind of fantasy, and to a lesser extent, sci-fi genre is almost any kind of that genre is represented on Galerion. So as I've been working on that document, I had to think, you know, like, what would beguilers look like from here? What would beguilers look like from this country? There's actually one country called Drama on Galerion that is basically it's a completely free market country. So it's a trader's paradise. And I said to myself, what would beguilers be doing there? And I came up with this idea where the beguilers offer their services openly to anyone who's trading. And during negotiations, they will cast on the other party. The only thing is that they will not cast on someone else who is also their client. So oftentimes, both parties come with beguilers. Beguilers get paid twice and do nothing.
Awesome.
I was particularly happy with how that one worked out.
That's so good. Was it easier writing these ones since you can incorporate the fluff into the guilds?
There were parts that were easier. It kind of let me actually write lore, which was which was exciting. But of course, I also had to take into account the existing lore of the area. I couldn't just say, you know, like these guys are, this Beguiler's Guild is the biggest, baddest bunch of mobsters in the country, because there might have already been one of those. And actually forced me to read a lot more about these different countries and become much more well-versed in the world of Galerion itself. And it also allowed me to work on archetypes, and I'm actually in the process of working on a few more archetypes and orders for that PDF that aren't necessarily, they aren't necessarily quite as balanced as the main Beguiler document, because they can afford to be a little bit more powerful because they're tied to a specific region or they're tied to a specific, group or alignment. So that's kind of a fun vacation from the regular, main conversion document.
Do you think any other settings that you would tackle the Beguiler in?
I've sort of toyed with the idea of moving the Beguiler into 5th edition, as it seems like a lot of interest is moving away from Pathfinder because of how well built 5th edition is. And I've kind of I put together a little bit of a framework, but I've got to spend more time like familiarizing myself with the system itself and really figuring out whether I want it to be its own class, whether I want it to be an archetype, because those were introduced in 5th edition. And there's all sorts of directions you could come at the Beguiler in 5th edition from. It could work as a bard or as a sorcerer or even as a warlock.
Oh, yeah.
So there's lots of interesting options. I've always kind of liked the idea of sneaky characters. And I think that's part of the reason that the Beguiler has endeared itself so well to me. And so anytime I look at a different system, I'm always saying, like, how can I make a Beguiler out of this?
So what's the last character that you've played?
The last time I've played in an actual tabletop RPG, I was the DM. So I was playing a whole host of characters. I think that suits me well. I'm a bit of a serial character creator. I like to write up a character, write out two pages of backstory, and then just put it on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm constantly, like, whenever I'm I don't have anything to do or I don't particularly feel like working on the Beguiler, I kind of scour the web a little bit for fantasy images, and I have a folder where I have character inspiration images, and then I kind of every once in a while I'll pick one up and I'll say, what's this person's deal? And I'll come up with an idea and write out. I have a OneNote page for characters and just kind of cobble them together.
Sounds like a good exercise.
It keeps you sharp in terms of coming up with new people.
The characters that you make when you run games, do you find yourself pulling from them? Just like, oh, I made a wizard who'd be perfect. Like,
yeah, oftentimes I do keep, yeah. And even when I'm creating them, I kind of keep a mind towards making them playable, because it's very easy to say, okay, this person has these amazing skills, but I do try and keep them keep them as close to rules legal as I can. I sometimes will fudge some of their abilities based on what I assume a reasonable DM would let me do, but I do try and keep them playable.
Nice. If you would like to be findable on the internet, do you want, where could people find you?
I think probably the easiest place to send them would be to my thread on Paizo for the Beguiler.
Okay, yeah, then we'll have links to your Beguiler project in the show notes that people can find. Thank you so much for doing this. This has been really fun.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Huge thanks again to Chris for sharing his project and time with me for the show. There are links to his conversion in the show notes if you want to try it out for yourself. If you do, I know he'd love to hear your feedback. There's also a new episode of Second Watch out by now if you haven't already heard it. Alex, Jim, and I recap Gen Con at Gen Con and very seriously considered recording it from a prone position on the floor. We were that tired. I hope you enjoy it. That's it for this week, heroes. You can find Modifier on Twitter at Modifier Podcast or at the headquarters at modifierpodcast.tumblr.com. You can send comments, questions, or contribution suggestions to modifierpodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show, please consider leaving a review on iTunes, as that helps more people find us. Modifier is a proud member of the One Shot Podcast Network, an amazing family of RPG podcasts that includes incredible shows like One Shot, Campaign, Backstory, and Talking Tabletop. Modifier's theme music was created by my favorite Bothan, Kat Greenfield, whose myriad talents are on display at katgreenfield.com. Next time on Modifier, we talk games and accessibility with Megan and Acer Tolentino. See you then!